gorgeous Wednesday to be locked in a basement doing radio, isn't it?
Well, could be worse.
Absolutely. I'm happy to be here. It was a nice drive. It's a beautiful day outside. It's a good day to be listening to the radio, that's for sure, if you're driving around outside.
Yeah.
Congratulations, everybody. It's 5 o'clock. Time for American Hit Radio on WHPC 90.3 FM. Congratulations for that, too. I'm your host, Tom Ryan. Heidi Morales Ryan, my lovely wife and co-host, here as well. Welcome back, Heidi. We missed you last week.
Aw, you say the nicest things.
And we have Jamie Trivato with us. We worked together without you last Wednesday. So now, you get to work with Jamie again.
I know. And I never got to say congratulations on your nuptials, Jamie.
Thank you.
There you go. Good. Good then. All that being said, I'm conscious of Jamie being here because last week we were playing pop hits from 1983. And that's, Jamie's era of specialty, so to speak, the 80s. I always remember, we would sort of like go head to head on a lot of that stuff. We seemed to agree on an awful lot of stuff last week, though. I mean, I ended up really admitting that I liked most of the stuff I was playing.
Uh-huh.
Although, I could come down a little bit harsh on it, but that doesn't mean I didn't like it, just to be honest. But what I want to do today is look at music from the exact same time period. But this time, I don't want to deal with the pop charts. I want to get totally off of the pop charts. So rather than looking at the stuff, everything that we played last week was top 40. So it was really well known. Some of it a little bit, maybe even too well known. We opened up with David Bowie's Let's Dance, for example,
Right.
So what I want to do now is more or less...
Got a lot of airplay.
Yeah. This is stuff that, for the most part, did not get a lot of airplay, or certainly didn't get much coverage on the top 40 stations. But I think it's just as representative of what was happening at that time, even though it might not have been nearly as popular as a lot of that stuff. Basically, we're playing deep album cuts from May and June of 1983. An interesting era. Vinyl still ruled. This is still basically the vinyl era. And all of these records, literally, which is what they are, these are things that I owned on vinyl. There weren't CDs yet around this point in time, pretty incredibly. Looking back at it, I'm like, yeah, I guess not.
Wow.
I didn't really make that transition until later in the 80s. A few more years. Just a couple more years, I guess, for that to happen. But... T-Bone Burnett is the first artist I want to look at. Now, he, in 83, was a solo artist, an obscure solo artist.
Very.
The people who might have known him then he was associated with Dylan. He went on tour with Dylan, and then he started his solo career. Was a really interesting writer, I thought, a smart performer. Somebody that was worth listening to. His lyrics were usually excellent. Usually a little bit, you could say, a little bit sarcastic. Maybe sometimes sounding like he's a bit self-righteous, but there was something, it was as if he was trying to basically perform these songs as though they were morality plays at times, and they were usually kind of funny at the same time. Well, he's gone on to huge fame as a producer and actually a compiler. He ended up being involved with Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, won the Grammy for compiling that record, and he's since done dozens of projects that are similar to that in nature, whether it was producing other artists to give them that Americana sense.
Mm-hmm.
He's more or less the king of Americana, is what basically happened as a producer. And these days, he was still trying to figure out, I wouldn't necessarily call these songs Americana in their style, but they're kind of funny. So I want to start with a song that is actually, it's an 80s view, a 1983 view of what it was like to live in the 1960s. And I think it's rather funny. The name of the album is Proof Through the Night. The name of this track is called The 60s by T-Bone Burnett.
I have a painter friend who says he actually slept with Jacqueline Kennedy. Or was it John Kennedy? Maybe it was Jacqueline Bisset. At any rate, I can tell I'm starting wrong. Let me begin again. There's a new breed of man. He's got a wife and some kids. He works behind a desk beside a computer. He watches a lot of television. Belongs to a health club. Drinks things like Cuddy and Seven, whatever that is. wears faded Levi's and Gucci loafers. His hair is long and perfectly groomed. He smokes the best marijuana, wears a gold Coke spoon in his pocket. And his speech is riddled with jargon like far out. Do your own thing, I hear you, into it. Blow my mind, freak. You know I'm a sports freak. I'm a jazz freak. I'm a video freak. He hates accident. Never questions authority. Politicians don't debate. They transcendental meditate. Stockbrokers aren't connecting. They're all strung out on heroin. Baseball players on full square. They've got beards and stringy hair. Car dealers don't just sell drive trains. They sometimes also deal cocaine. When he was younger and out struggling to climb the ladder, he used to fight with his wife or have a night out with the boys, and he'd maybe go to a bar and try to pick up some strange, if you get my drift. And after a while he started hearing about free love, and he felt left out. And he tortured his imagination dreaming of pot parties for those suntanned girls in halter tops with their cutoffs slid up to their belt loops. Then he saw a picture in Playboy of Ursula Andress on the arm of some hippie, and that did it. He began his rebellion late. Now he's got a designer camper. And one time he even got to sleep in it with one of those girls in the cutoffs. But it made me feel awful, 'cause he had to pay her $50. $20 for anybody else. Politicians don't debate. They transcendental meditate. Stockbrokers aren't in by 10. They're all strung out on heroin. Baseball players aren't so square. They've got beard and stringy hair. Car dealers don't just sell drive trains. They sometimes also deal cocaine. Here's the brave new world on the mirror.
In some ways, that song is even more interesting, I think, in 2013 than it was in 1983. In 83, it was a bit of a study on its time in relation to the 60s, because it really is more about the 80s than it is about the 60s. That's why I thought it was a great way to start the show, with him talking about guys using the word freak, and there's so many cocaine references, and how baseball players aren't so square. They got beards and freaky hair. It's funny, you know?
Right.
Car dealers that deal cocaine, TV, video freaks. keep all the bad, destroy all the good. The guitar players on this album are stunning, the list of guitar players. That was Pete Townsend playing guitar on that track.
That's kind of kooky.
And elsewhere on the album is Mick Ronson, Bowie's ex-guitarist from Spiders of Mars. Richard Thompson is on the record. Ry Cooder is on the record.
Wow. It's a list of A-list. Right?
Yeah, it's stunning. You know, what's really crazy about it is I don't think this record was even ever released on CD.
That's pretty crazy.
I think it was only available as a vinyl release. I don't think they ever put it out on CD, which is really crazy. Because it was a great record. I want to play one more song because, like I said, this is, you know, this stuff is basically forgotten. So this was the lead-off track from the same album called Proof Through the Night by T-Bone Burnett. This track is called The Murder Weapon.
Yeah.
I love doing this radio show. I really do. So I complain all the time about that. Like you were just saying, Heidi, there's so much new music. We never get to hear the old stuff anymore. And it's really true because there's so much music that comes out that I'm pretty much forced to listen to something new every single day of my life. And I never really get to play the old stuff. So I get the only time I get to do it is when I get to come on the air and start thinking about, oh, let me do an anniversary show. And I probably haven't played this stuff in 20 years. So it's great to hear it again. From my perspective, I love doing it. And I also love it because it does, like I say, provide some sort of a historical perspective. Music 30 years ago to today, you know, how relevant is it? How much relevance has it maintained?
That song in particular to me sounds very like, the production values are very 80s centric.
Yes, you've got that very
synthesized sound that's in there.
Right, the gated drums and, you know, a little very produced.
Yes.
Produced beautifully, really, in this instance, but sometimes it's a bit much. One thing that the next band I'm going to cover, this was a big change, actually. This was the sign of like something almost rootsy about the 80s. And we're talking about T-Bone Burnett representing Americana. Well, out of Athens, Georgia, was a band. I was just put out a tiny little single on the Hibtone label. Didn't really go anywhere. Then they put out an EP. I remember my friend Rich Umbach came over to my house with this EP and he played it for me. We both thought it was great. But we also, you know, it's kind of sounded like some of the stuff that we were trying to work on for ourselves even. It ended up being very influential on what we were wanting to do musically ourselves. But it was kind of weird because we're listening to it and said, what is this guy talking about? You know, you could really hardly understand a word of the lyrics.
Interesting.
And we'd play it and we used to like kind of mock it back and forth saying, what do you hear? You know, we'd be making up these ridiculous mouth sound phrases because that's all that it sounded like. And really for the first two or three albums, that's exactly what REM sounded like.
Yeah.
Michael Stipe just really did not enunciate at all.
Not at all.
At all. And it became a bit of like a joke. And at the time, I mean, I was attributing it to shyness. That's what I was thinking at that. You know, maybe he just doesn't really feel comfortable, you know, singing. Or, you know, maybe it was a lack of confidence in saying something explicit in his songwriting.
Perhaps.
You know, maybe he wasn't comfortable in that role yet. So he wanted to basically convey the melody without having to necessarily have it mean something literal in words. Or maybe it was a deliberate affectation. That's another possibility. Maybe he was thinking, you know what, by people not understanding me, everybody's going to hear something completely different.
Right, they'll hear what they want.
And right, they'll put their own thing into it. So that's, to this day, is what I do with the song that sort of became the lead-off track. It was the song that was their first single, and it became the lead-off track when the album came out. And I thought it was really funny that the album was titled Murmur. Nobody ever really commented on that in the reviews. Everybody just gave it 5 stars and said it was a fantastic record. But nobody ever, you know, made a joke out of the fact that it's called Murmur and you can't understand a single word that Michael Stipe is mumbling on the record.
Right.
But here's the lead-off track from the album. It's called Radio Free Europe. We'll be right back. not understanding it didn't really matter at all, because this, you know, Peter Buck's guitar is just so, well, they use the word jangly, of course, to explain it, because he plays a lot of arpeggiated chords, but they're really well constructed, very melodic, incredibly melodic, and Michael Stipe's melodies transcend the absence of very easily understood lyrics at this stage of their career. It added a level of mystery to it, no doubt. And yet it just seemed like it was so easy to listen to. It just seems like, oh, it's right there. It's a great song. It's simple. Well, you know, who cares what they're saying? It's one, if you were the type of person that didn't really listen to lyrics, you might not have even noticed that you didn't understand the words, you know?
It was a good hum-along song.
Yeah. Hum-along as opposed to sing-along.
Right. Unlike Cocteau Twins, who also made up their own kind of language, but never really got anywhere.
Good point.
Yeah,
they were just goofy. They really were just goofy. I mean, you hear definite phrases, like you hear the phrase "straight off the boat" and that, and I'm thinking, okay, Radio Free Europe, they're probably talking about,
yeah, meet me in a
country, and just, yeah. It sounds sort of like it is about the situation almost of radio in Europe, and based, you know, when there were things like Radio Caroline, and they were broadcasting off of boats, so that they didn't have to worry about falling under the auspices of the BBC.
Right.
Things like that, without being, you know, it's possibly what it was about, but, you know, who knows, really. Here's the next song is probably just as curious, that I want to play from the same album. It's called Talk About the Passion. It's just a beautiful song. And maybe it's, you know, in this instance, you can get some ideas. Maybe it's about, you know, the inability to talk about things that are incredibly important or that involve passion, whether it's religious passion or especially religious passion, but perhaps any type of passion. Who knows? You know, just let the song be what it is, because it's beautiful as it is. From the album Murmur, this is called Talk About the Passion.
Talk about the passion. We're not.
still one of my favorite bands. I kind of miss them. I mean, their albums got a little bit less engaging or on a predictable level anyway, which is actually a good thing. You don't want a band to be too predictable. And as far as understanding the words, too, it's kind of obviously we notice now that some of these phrases are French. And that didn't help me then because I wasn't expecting that. So I'm just saying, what is a combien de temps? What's it, what? You know, okay, it's a French phrase. I get it now. You're listening to American Hit Radio, by the way. Heidi and I are here every Wednesday and Friday from 5 until 6. If you like the show, we actually save them all. We put them up on our website. So if you want to check out some of, if you want to hear the show again sometime, or if you want to check out some of our other shows at your own leisure, it's easy to do. Just, the URL is AmericanHitNetwork.com. It's very simple. Or just search for American Hit Radio. We come right up. And you'll see the Wednesday shows on the homepage on the left side, our Friday show, How Music Changed. Obviously, on the right side. There's a few hundred shows there for you to wade through. So check it out if you could. I'd like that. Well, now I've got a bunch that I want to cover, Heidi. So I'm going to have to basically do like, you know, one song per band.
Okay, rapid fire.
I really can't do this two tracks per album thing for the rest of the show, unfortunately. But this is an interesting release from 1983 that has since been almost completely forgotten. When Malcolm McLaren, you know, after he, of course, he was the guy that basically was behind the brains behind the Sex Pistols.
Right.
The creator, so to speak.
Yes, you know, yes.
The mastermind. He is also responsible for Adam and the Ants, Bow Wow Wow.
He had a lot of groups that he worked with.
Yeah. Well, those are like, I guess, the big three. But they all, by 1983, they were all gone. He lost them all. So everybody figured that, you know, okay, what's he going to do now? And probably, you know, figured, you know, really nothing. He was, you know, trying to be outrageous. What he ended up doing was he decided he was going to start a solo career. That sounded like such a bad idea.
But this, that album was good.
It was really, I mean, but, you know, at the time it just sounded horrible on paper. Wait, Malcolm McLaren, the manager, he's not a musician, is going to release a solo album called Duck Rock? Oh, my God. You just presume it's going to be horrible. But what he did was fairly brilliant. He built the album to sound like it was a broadcast from a hip urban New York radio station.
Right.
With talking between the tracks, taking phone calls and everything else. It combined the work of Trevor Horn, Art of Noise, mm-hmm. with a rap duo called the world famous Supreme Team, for real. And they're basically, you know, it's that production with the rapping, which was a fairly new thing in 1983 as far as being a commercial entity. And he brings it all together, and he actually features scratching. At this point in time, scratching I think the only time anybody had heard scratching before that was with Grandmaster Flash and the Wheels of Steel. I think that was the only, you know, released track of scratching that was released before this. So it was actually way cutting edge. And then he does all of this on a song that is like 200 freaking years old. I mean, he takes a song called Buffalo Gals Go Round the Outside. I mean, my God, it's older than the United States of America, that song. It's like
older than the hills.
Right. So you take a song that is like just ridiculously, you know, it doesn't even make sense. And to do all this cool stuff with it, I'm fairly impressed. So here's Malcolm McLaren from the album Duck Rock with Buffalo Gals.
Yeah. You're listening to the world's famous Supreme Team Show, WHBI 105.9 FM.
Chicago, by the name of Harvey, Andy, and Carizal. And they're some very good friends of mine. My name is Justin Lott of Superstar C.
And I have something here. The first call of the night goes by the name of Shakira from Soundview Projects. Kareem, Everlasting, Equan, Allah. And that's Rakim, Basha Allah from South Shore High School. They always make dedications with world's famous. Michelle from Bed-Stuy is checking us out. Dre B checking us out. Ace Key from Brownsville.
Stop. all gals go around the outside, round the outside, round the outside. Three buffalo gals go around the outside. Four buffalo gals go around the outside, round the outside, round the outside. Four buffalo gals go around the outside and do-si-do your partners.
Time actually in 83, because you had this whole, you had punk and urban radio that were beginning to get mashed up together. You know, the Clash had that first track on Sandinista that was getting a lot of airplay. I remember on the urban stations here in New York City, it became a huge hit. It was like a 12-inch single on black urban radio, and it was so cool to hear that happening. I was like, oh man, barriers are finally being broken down the way they should. Unfortunately, it was short-lived. It didn't last as long as it should have. I want to also apologize after the fact to the last caller and just in advance to anybody else who's going to call me. The phones here at the station are weird. I don't know why, but they just basically randomly hang up in the middle of, like, I don't, it used to be 8 seconds. Now it just seems to be some random length of time. So if you do call and we get cut off, I apologize. There ain't nothing I can do about it. The thing, I just suddenly hear a dial tone. Hopefully that'll get fixed soon. Anyway, we're looking at music that is now exactly 30 years old. All of this stuff came out 30 years ago. Yes, you're
my
that old.
Freshman year of college.
Right. It's just, you know, passing time. Now, the one thing that Malcolm McLaren did, of course, he was hugely influential, not only with just that track with his solo career, but much more so, actually, with what he had done with the Sex Pistols. The Sex Pistols, in a lot of ways, had changed the face of music because punk became hugely influential.
Absolutely.
It might not have been incredibly famous or sold a bazillion records, but it actually spawned so many people to follow. It's like garage rock did in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the English Invasion caused so many garage rock bands to exist. After the Sex Pistols, the same thing was happening in America. There were so many grassroots punk bands that were popping up all over the place. One of them, out of Minneapolis, was the Replacements.
Classic.
And their first records were absolutely raucous hardcore punk. Just straight up, you know, each song 90 seconds long, screaming. And you know, the first album was called Sorry Ma, Forgot to Took Out the Trash. I remember that. The second album was called The Replacements Stink. And then on the third album, they kind of like looked like they were going to grow up just a little bit. But they actually began to inform some melody. Paul Westerberg, the main writer of the band, really, I shouldn't say the only writer, but definitely the main writer for sure, began to utilize melody a little bit and sounded like some of the manic and reckless insanity that defined their earlier stuff began to get ironed out a little bit. I mean, this record was about as much of a mess as their live shows were. If you ever saw The Replacements live around this time, there were times when you weren't sure if they were going to make it to the end of the show. And sometimes they literally didn't. They would fall over, fall off the stage, pass out, break their instrument, and then they'd have to... This was an album that sounded like that. You didn't know if you were going to make it to the end of side two because the stuff was so wacky. But one track from it, I'd say it captures the punkiness and also the melody at the same time. It's one of my favorite songs from the album called Hootenanny by The Replacements. Here's Color Me Impressed. And that's one of the more logical songs on the album.
Scary.
I mean, it's careening all over the place, but it's in a really fun way. It really conveys the lyrics and, you know, can you stand me? Can you stand me on my feet or something? The lyrics, just they're good. They're funny. And it sounds just like one of their shows would, if you could just imagine them falling all over the place. Anyway, looking at music from 1983, get that dog out of here. That's Heidi's phone ringing. We might need to use that as a sound effect. One thing that was not happening in 1983 was folk music. I mean, that was just not hip. There was like virtually none of it to be found anywhere, which makes it bizarre almost that a guy like Billy Bragg would get famous in 1983. This was the year that he released the album, the EP, Life's a Riot, with Spy vs. Spy. And he's got this whole, this Woody Guthrie vibe about him. It's, you know, this young English kid with an acoustic guitar singing rebellious songs about, you know, the Union and all this stuff. You'd think, this is impossible to believe that. But it was getting a little bit of airplay on college radio. Somehow, I guess because it was so different, it got attention. So this is the song that pretty much brought him to the forefront for a little while anyway. And I guess this was his claim to fame until he eventually did that whole thing with Wilco, Billy Bragg and Wilco, mm-hmm. when they did the albums of Woody Guthrie's lyrics. From the EP called Life's a Riot with Spy vs. Spy, which you can now get on a collection called Back to Basics, a CD compiling a few of his EPs. Here's a track entitled A New England.
I was 21 years when I wrote this song. I'm 22 now, but I won't be for long. People ask me, when will you grow up to be a man? But all the girls I loved at school are already pushing prams. I loved you then as I love you still. Though I put you on a pedestal, they put you on the pill. I don't feel bad about letting you go. I just feel sad about letting you know. Survive on what you send every time you need a friend. I saw two shooting stars last night. I wished on them, but they were only satellites. It's wrong to wish on space hardware. I wish you'd care. I don't want to change the world. I'm not looking for New England. I'm just looking for another girl.
You know, when I build these playlists, I don't listen to the songs, usually. I'm just compiling the list and thinking, oh, okay, I'll hear them on the radio. So I'm actually hearing this song for the first time. I don't think I've heard that in 25 years. So, like, the confusion that I'm, you know, speaking about before playing the song about how could this, you know, acoustic, you know, sort of like folk thing be popular in 83 is now beginning to become, now I see why. I'm hearing it. I'm going, oh, I remember. It sounded like acoustic punk, really.
Yeah.
It was kind of made it cool.
It was raw, yeah.
Yeah, it was minimalist. And in the wake of punk, with everything, you know, beginning to get produced again in the direction of new wave and such, he was a breath of fresh air in that regard, you know, bringing things down to a simpler level. It was nice to hear something being expressed so simple and purely like that. Meanwhile, in America, actually fairly local, I think they were a Jersey band, Violent Femmes were doing something not too different.
Oh, were they a Jersey band?
Yeah, I think they were. Well, yeah, Gordon okay. Gano, I think, was around here, more or less. They were also minimalist, to say the least. Although they weren't trying to be political. In fact, they were anything but. They were actually childish or childlike, but definitely adolescent in their nature. Sort of like Jonathan Richman meets the Buzzcocks, in a way, with a bunch of guys who were just singing. They sounded like they were still in, like, sophomores in high school and, you know, complaining about it, basically discovering sex and
yes.
but being unable to get girls. I mean, at the time it was too juvenile for me when I heard it. I felt like, oh, I'm just too old for this. And
well, I was probably were on your second marriage by then. I was still in college and I felt young.
Not quite. I wasn't quite on my second marriage. I was definitely done with the first, just about done with the first, because this is 83, right? Yeah. So yeah, I'm 24.
You probably had four kids by then.
Don't let anybody else know about that. Especially their mothers. But let's change the subject then and get right back to the Violent Femmes. The track, like I said, it's sort of like, I didn't get it then, but I think I get it more now just for appreciating it for what it is, especially now that I'm able to, like, you know, tie it into the whole Jonathan Richman thing, because I've always loved Jonathan Richman.
Right.
And the Buzzcocks are one of my favorite pop punk bands in the world. So why wouldn't I appreciate, you know, sort of what's going on here as well? So from their debut album, which was also just simply called Violent Femmes, here's the track called Blister in the Sun.
Thank you. toes run out. I'm high as a kite, I just might stop to check you. When I'm a walking, I strut, I stop, and I'm so strung out. And I'm high as a kite, I just might stop to check you. Body and beats, I stain my sheets, I don't even know why. My girlfriend, she's at the end, she is starting to cry. When I'm a walking, I strut, I stop, and I'm so strung out. Let me go on, like I blister in the sun. Let me go on, big hands, I know you're the one.
I'm missing the sunglasses and the bongos.
For the punk beatnik in you.
It's funny because there was another band from Jersey called the Bongos around this time, big in the Hoboken thing, you know, played at Maxwell's all the time around the same time. I wonder when that record came out.
You'll have to look it up.
Drums Along the Hudson. I remember that album. That was also kind of around. Maybe it was a little earlier than this era. Because I remember I did rediscover that album not too long
ago. Yeah, I think you found a copy somewhere on the interwebs.
Yeah, I remember I bought vinyl. Because remember, I played it for you. You didn't know it. And it's a good record.
Yeah, it was good.
It's a really good record.
Good.
Not unlike this in senses. You know, short, concise songs, lots of good melody. All right. Looking at songs that are now 30 years old. Came out pretty much, around this time of year in 1983. Reminding me of what it was like to be 30 years younger. If you were there then, maybe you're remembering the same things, you know, or your own memories, of course, from this era. And if you weren't around then, you know, you can get a little bit of a taste of what it was like. Because this is really much more representational of what it was like, if you ask me, than the pop stuff. The pop stuff was ubiquitous, but it wasn't really as indicative of what the times were like. The times really were about these other tracks that were filling. This is what you'd be hearing in the clubs. This is what your friends would be listening to.
Oh, yeah.
You wouldn't, you know, what you're hearing on the radio, whatever, when you're driving around. But this was much, I don't know.
Well,
this,
unless you had a good college radio station.
Yeah, which we did around here. We actually did. I forget what it was called, but it was coming out of New York City. I think it was WNYC in the lower 80s. Was playing tons of punk. They would have they actually had a hardcore hour where they would play nothing but incredibly insane thrash hardcore. Where you'd hear, I mean, I was almost going to play Minor Threat today. They were on my playlist.
Oh, I went to see them.
That would have been crazy if I played Minor Threat. I had to really go through the lyric list because I don't think there's a song that they've released that's not full of swear words. But I did find a couple, but then I found out that I was wrong about the release year. It actually wasn't 83. So I'm like, okay, forget it.
Actually, it might have been 82.
It was earlier than 83. Yeah, I think it was 81 or 82. So I said, okay, it wouldn't have been appropriate anyway, so move on. But I came real close. I mean, I'm looking right at the songs I was going to play. Next band I am going to play is a band. This was another band that there was like a little weird sort of a feeling about what was going to happen with these guys and a lot of disagreement about whether they were even good. Of course, after Love Will Tear Us Apart and those tracks, Joy Division had gotten a huge degree of fame and their reputation had just gone insane in the wake of the hanging death of the lead singer of the band.
Right.
And it was right on the same. I'm not sure what came first, if I knew of the hanging or if I found out or if I heard the music first. They came very close, one to another. And it sounded like the band was going to be, what are you going to do when you lose your songwriter and your lyricist and the front man? And the rest of the band was obviously fairly naive as far as instrumentalists. They actually decided they would like rely heavily on their bass player for a lot of their songs, for the rhythm aspect of their songs. And they started putting out 12-inch records that sounded a lot like Joy Division. It's like, oh, maybe they'll be okay. I got the feeling that actually the first couple that they put out were songs that were left over.
Perhaps.
From the Joy Division era.
Okay.
And then they released
That's believable.
Yeah. And the first album came out, though, and it wasn't very good. And the impression was that, they're not going to, it's over for them. Then out of nowhere, the song Blue Monday comes out, which was a great 12-inch. And all of a sudden it revives, your faith in the fact that these guys can survive. Then they put out the album Power, Corruption, and Lies.
Mm-hmm.
And although it wasn't consistently great, the high spots I thought were fantastic. And then I knew at this point on, I said, okay, you know, these guys are definitely...
The potential's there.
They were a really important 80s band. I mean, a lot of people had difficulty with liking them, I guess, because of the naive aspect of what they were doing. But there was something that was actually really beautiful and moving, I thought, about their songs. It might have been because they were both naive and melodic at the same time. And deeply emotional, you know, that they seemed to be coming from a place that was fairly heavy, and that all spoke to me. So let's hear, this is the lead-off track from the album Power, Corruption, and Lies by New Order. Here's Age of Consent.
Won't you
What is it about this band that fills me with longing? It just gives you the sense of like
your
longing
ennui.
Desire. Yeah, there's something about it that just it grabs a hold of me emotionally in a lot of ways. They were good at doing that when they were on their best songs. Well, another hour came and went, poof, just like that. Next week we'll be doing something besides the 80s. Maybe we'll go back to 73, 90. Who knows? I'll take a look at see what's out there. But I hope you can join us for another hour of American Hit Radio. We'll be back then. I'll say goodbye now. We'll leave you with a little bit of a classic track from radio around this time. Tears for Fears with Mad World. Take care, everybody. See you next week.